The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Stevie Nicol. And in a moment, we'll be hearing from Craig Burley and Nader Manua. We'll also be hearing from Archie Rintoul just a little later on, our roving reporter. And we start the show talking about Manchester City and Liverpool. Yes, they will be doing it all again on Saturday. But this time, it's in the FA Cup semi-final. And this time, there has to be a winner. City, slight favourites going into it. And this time, Jurgen Klopp says his side have to take a step up to the next level. Speaking on Thursday, he said City were really strong last week and we were not at our best. I'd like to see a game where we are at our best. That would be nice. Could be a surprise if all of a sudden we're good. The boys did a lot of good stuff in the game, but there were a couple of things and I know that we can perform to a different level. I want to start with you on this one, Nader, because it looks as though City will be making some changes in this one, could be forced to as well, with some of the injury reports we're seeing, potential injuries to Kyle Walker and Kevin De Bruyne, and maybe they won't feature. What type of a lineup do you think we're going to see from Pep Guardiola?
I think he'll make changes. I think throughout the rounds he has managed to do that. And I think if you look back to the semi-final last year, I think it was a similar sort of position whereby they were trying to battle on all fronts. So they just rotated the team. This is what they did. But I think one thing about City, and as is the case of Liverpool this season, they can make these changes, but then the team still looks very, very good and is still capable of being able to compete. And I don't think it's as good as, say, the side that's played against Liverpool a week ago. But, you know, it's a semi-final of a cup competition, so anything could happen. And I think, what's the point in having a squad, especially with the depth that they have, if you're not going to be able to use it at key points? Because all these games matter. But that team that I've put out there, which obviously is very likely to not be the City side, is still capable of performing well. And if they perform well, then they're going to be in with a chance of winning the game. And interestingly, I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool made two or three changes as well, because I think the same sentiment arises for them, whereby, you know, in the FA Cup, they haven't always gone with the side which we've seen playing week in, week out in the Premier League. So I think it makes for a very, very interesting tie. And I think the beauty of it this time is that there has to be a winner. So for all the both the 2-2 draws that we've seen, which we've enjoyed, now, you know, somebody's got to find a way to make it through to the final.
Yeah, the 11 you just saw there was Nadim's pick of the 11 that he'd like to see out there for Manchester City. How do you think they're going to shape up, Craig?
Who's City?
Yes.
Well, I didn't see Nadim's team in full because I've got a bit of sellotape over my phone here. such is the restrictions of working from home. So, by the way, does my nose look red, Stevie? Can always tell it's golf season when you forget to put the sun cream on because my nose.
You mean does it look normal? Is that what you mean?
All right, big and red then, big and red. But I've got a feeling
that lots of changes, though, Craig. I think that's what we're saying because of what we saw, the fact it was a tough Champions League game midweek for them.
Yeah, and I think I was saying on the show the other night, Kay, that even if Kevin De Bruyne is fully fit, I've got a feeling he's getting rested anyway because, as you know, the Premier League is up for grabs. That's going to be a bun fight to the end. The Champions League is huge for them now as well. Of course, the FA Cup is big, but he looked a little bit tired than the Atletico Madrid game. He was immense against Liverpool, of course, last weekend. But even the best need a rest. So as Nedim was saying, there's going to be some changes. But yeah, I think there's going to be obviously a lot more changes for Man City, I think. Obviously, Liverpool make a lot of changes from their Champions League side, but not necessarily from their league side that played last week. But I just get the feeling that it just favours Liverpool a little bit, which is the opposite view I had from the league game, because of the excerpts of Man City, both mentally and physically, against that horrible, horrible Atleti side in midweek, with all the bumps and bruises that you mentioned and all the knocks that City had to take and some of the skullduggery. That has to have taken some out of those City players.
How much does a game like that take it out of you as a professional player, Stevie?
Well, it does, but I think the important thing is that we're talking about three in a trot. You know, it's enough on your plate to have one of those games before a big game, but to have three, there's no question. I'm with Nadim. I think that's going to be close to the side that Pep will start. However, I think Liverpool are going to play the strongest team, and I think that's going to be a problem for City. That back line with Ake and Zinchenko, I don't think they're up to holding up against the Liverpool side. Fernandinho, you know, can't get around the field the way he used to. So, Stefan in goal, you know, you're looking at four changes that I think he will make that, no question, drop the level of City. On paper, they're a good side, yes, I agree with that. But with the playing against a team like Liverpool, who I think will play their full team, and it's a question of who Klopp decides to play as opposed to, you know, that won't make any difference to the way Liverpool play, basically. So I think this could be a trip too far for City. I really fancy Liverpool to win this game, and I think Klopp 100% is coming out all guns blazing.
Well, I want to get to you on Liverpool's 11 in just a moment, but just because we have got Nadim on and we are talking about that game against Atleti, what were your thoughts, Nadim, on what you saw from Atleti's tactics and from how City responded to what we saw on the pitch?
I think overall City, you know, they responded very, very well, because I think for the last sort of few years with City, you get used to seeing them just play a certain style of football, dominate games, control possession, just control the tempo, control everything. But going to play in that stadium, to play against the Simeone side and with those players within it, you always, for me anyway, I felt like they'd have to do something else. I think the way they were able to sort of manage their emotions in that moment, I think was very, very key in sort of them hoping that they can finish the season with that Champions League trophy. Because it's an understanding that there are so many other different ways to win a game. And with that one, for some of the players going in there, they're probably feeling that level of hostility for the first time, feeling the real sort of dark arts of what Atletico were trying to do for the first proper time. And it could have been so easy to have gone under there. I think it really, really could have done. Even though Atletico, in my opinion, are as good a football inside as City, things could have still gone their way. So I think the fact that they managed that was good. I think Atletico, you know, they have their fan base, and the fan base I don't expect it to grow much over the years if it stays like this. But this is what's to be expected. When they play at that stadium, when they play at home, when they play as an underdog, when they're chasing something, when the manager's trying to get the fans involved, the players are trying to get the crowd involved, like, that's inevitably what it turns into. And I think credit City for getting through, because at the end of the day, it wasn't the easiest task in the world.
Craig, do you think we saw a new side to City and what they had to deal with, and the fact that they did get through against a team with Atleti's antics on the night?
Not so much a new side. I think if you go back to Ancelotti's comments when he was Everton manager, for those that remember, and I hope this wasn't his team talk, I'm sure it wasn't, he said, if you try and outrun them, they'll outrun you. If you try and outplay them, outplay you. And if you try and outfight them, they'll fight with you, because they've got some big physical players. Don't kid yourself, City haven't got some physicality about them. They have. But for those that watched the show on Thursday when Stevie and I were on, and I think we're on the same page here, and it wasn't the whole 90 minutes, but it was on and off, and it certainly was at the end. I thought it was a disgrace what some of the things that that Atletico Madrid tried to get away with. It was like watching at times football again from 1975 when it was lawless. So in that sense, City did, yeah, keeping a clean sheet, never really looked like scoring apart from when Gundogan hit the post, and had to get it done another way. But I don't think it's a new side of City. I think they've always had that steeliness about them. They've just made some mistakes at key times, particularly in the Champions League knockout stages. And it was close the other night. It was close, particularly at the end. But they got the job done and had to deal with even stuff after the game, for those that have seen the videos of one or two of the Atleti players losing the plot in the tunnel after the game. I thought they handled it pretty well, but it's definitely, I think, left a mark on them for this weekend. There's no doubt about it. That was a tough night in Madrid.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what we do get from Jurgen Klopp, full strength side. It would appear available to him, and you think he's going to take full advantage of that, Stevie?
Well, why would he have seven first-teamers rested against Benfica if he's not going to play his first team on Saturday? So, for me, the question is it Keita or is it Thiago? And is it Firmino or is it Jota? And either way, you're not losing anything. That's why I was saying, if you look at the City lineup, which probably is going to be, you're losing a lot with the changes. Whatever decision Klopp makes or whatever way he goes, whether it's Firmino and Keita or not, he's not losing anything. And I would play Firmino, by the way, because of the problems that Liverpool had holding the ball against City. And if he's anywhere near his best, that would be a huge difference, especially against a defence. There's going to be weakened, no question.
When we see the fact that they had a much smoother ride, we're just talking about that, the fact that Jurgen Klopp was able to rotate Nadum, do you think that that is going to play a big factor in this one, and that maybe Pep Guardiola will be looking at a bit longingly, thinking they have an advantage in this aspect?
No, I think, for me, I think both managers are very good at just being able to handle their own side of things. And, you know, there's no point saying, well, they've got an advantage because of this. I think they're going to prepare their side in a way whereby they want to go out and try and win the game. I think the only thing that maybe matters in my mind is the fact that Liverpool were based at home. So both Champions League games were difficult in their own sort of way. But for City to be in Madrid and then to be travelling around, you know, that time can make a difference to certain people because you sort of have to adapt your plans based around it. So, you know, say Liverpool making the changes in midweek, I thought firstly it's a brave call because the game wasn't done even though they were the biggest side in that situation. But it worked out. You were able to rest some of your players. You were able to win the game. Well, not to win the game, to win the tie overall. So, you know, it ticks the box, gets you into semi-final. Now gets you a significant piece of competition for the weekend because there were players like Firmino who did well in that week, who didn't start the week before. And now maybe there's an expectation because he's in good form. Maybe he can start the weekend. Maybe Jota's thinking, maybe this is my turn to start tomorrow. So I think they're in a better spot, and as we'll see, according to, you know, predictions, I'm slightly leaning towards Liverpool this weekend, which is something I never thought I'd be saying on air, to be honest.
Well, we'll be getting those predictions in just a moment. But Craig, I just wanted to ask you, we did hear Jurgen Klopp at the top of the show what he'd said about his side needing to step it up a level from the last game against City. What can they do better in this clash?
Keep the ball better, as Stevie said, and don't. Have more faith in trying to play out through the high press. And I'm not sure City will press as much as what they did early on at the Etihad, purely because of the reasons we've talked about with the schedule. But they'll still press to an extent, and I think Liverpool need to be less panicky in their possession. And I think that would have disappointed Jurgen Klopp that at times it was just getting hoofed, particularly in the first 20 minutes. And so it just kept coming back at them and back at them and back at them. And so they need to do that better, and I agree with Stevie. I think there is a sense that when Liverpool don't have the ball, Thiago, the game passed him by a little bit, and maybe that's why Stevie's gone for Keita possibly in the side, because he's more dynamic, he can get around, he can get up and down. Clearly he can't pass the ball like Thiago can, his quality on the ball, but you don't always have the ball when you're playing City, so there's another side to the game. So one or two little things, obviously, that he would not have been pleased with last week. But I think better possession, Kay, would be one of them, because they were, particularly in the first 20 minutes to half an hour, they just kept giving it back to City, and they're going to punish you when that happens.
Jurgen Klopp hasn't won the FA Cup with Liverpool, obviously. Mm. How important do you think it's going to be for them? Obviously, they're on course for a quadruple, but do you think he is completely serious about scooping this silverware this season?
Well, I think he is, but I think a lot of it is down to the way the games have fallen. You know, City are going to make changes because, unfortunately for them, not just because of the opponent they had, but being away from home as well in the second leg and the problems with the two legs, the way the game's fallen after playing Liverpool already. I think Klopp's just been a little fortunate the way that the fixtures have fallen for his team, that he can come into this semi-final not having a care about anything other than the FA Cup. You know, even previous years we've said he's not interested. He probably wasn't interested because it was the Premier League and the Champions League that were at the top of his list. Well, he's got these in the bag now. And he's now found himself in a position where he can go and win the FA Cup. And he's in a position where he can play his first team in the FA Cup in a semi-final against a team that he probably knows will not be at full strength. So I think 100% he's after the FA Cup.
So Stevie's obviously mentioned who he thinks is going to win. Nadum has too. We have got the predictions from our panellists, and it is very Liverpool heavy, shall I say. Nadum, Liverpool 2-1. Stevie, Liverpool 2-1. And Craig, Liverpool 3-2. Bit of a change. from the Premier League meeting. That game is coming up, semi-final between the two of Man City against Liverpool on Saturday. But we'd like to talk about the other semi-final. It is Chelsea taking on Crystal Palace, and obviously Chelsea knocked out of the Champions League by Real Madrid this week at the Bernabeu, when it did look as though they might actually march on and secure themselves a victory in the tie overall. Craig, how much do you think this is going to impact the game at the weekend against Palace?
Oh, I think they're in a much better footing this weekend now than they were prior to, well, just after the Real Madrid game at home, when Tuchel himself conceded the tie, basically. Obviously, they were still in it, but he publicly conceded it. He also said he was worried about Southampton, who they whipped by 6 goals, if they played like the way they played again. So he got a response from his team in 2 games. Yes, he didn't get through, but he got a response in the league game. He got a response in Madrid. Could have won it, didn't, but it was a much better performance. And I think that puts him in a much better footing going into this game. Look, I saw Palace, it might have been, I can't remember if it was the first game of the season or a couple of games into the season at Stamford Bridge, and they were awful. They were absolutely awful. But he has turned it round big time, Patrick Vieira. It's obviously taken time for him to work and stuff, but as the seasons get on, they've got better and they've got better. Got some good young players in there. They've got a nice mix. And that was the infamous game recently at Selhurst Park when Lukaku only had, was it one touch or whatever it was? I can't remember. So they were, they're a tough nut to crack. They're a much, much better side than when Chelsea faced them at Stamford Bridge at the start of the season. Vieira's done some great work there, but there's no doubt Chelsea's record in the FA Cup in the last 20 years or so is terrific. It's a competition that I think Tuchel needs now because of his position in the league and out of the Champions League. And they're the favourites. If they play well and they're clinical up front, they're probably going to win this game. But it's not going to be a walk in the park because Palace are more than a decent side, I think.
And one player Palace will be without is Conor Gallagher. The fear clause coming into play here. The 22-year-old on loan from Chelsea. And even though Palace did ask and request that he be able to play against his parent club, the answer was no. What do you make of this situation, Nadim?
I don't know if the guys agree with me on this, but for me, basically, obviously it depends on the type of loan anyway, but if you're being loaned out by your club, they're basically saying that you're surplus to requirements for the season and you're not really going to be playing in the first team. So if you're not good enough to play in said team, then why do they think that you're too good to play against the same team? So I would have liked to have seen him go up and compete against them. And maybe that'll bring out more in their own side. I know there's the worry about, oh, but what if he scores against us? Well, focus that attention on your team and stopping the opposition from scoring against you. Like, if this guy's going to end up being the difference, then why is he on loan in the first place? And I think that's such a shame for him because it's such a big occasion, the semi-final of the Cup. And now in some ways, he's probably going to be rooting for his parent club to lose so he can play in the final. So, I don't know. It's a shame that he's going to be missing out. Who knows? You never know when you're going to get the chance to play at Wembley again. And the hope is he'll get plenty of opportunity in the future. And it's a shame that he can't play, but I suppose those are the rules within England. And yeah, it's just unfortunate the way that things have fallen out for him.
Oh, Steve, he's been instrumental in getting them there. Now he doesn't get the rewards.
You think Chelsea care? Hold on a second. If we let Conor Gallagher play, then Palace are going to be a far better side. And he's one of their top scorers, and he might score. So guess what? He's not playing. I don't care who it is. If he's your player and he can beat you, then he's not playing. You take every single advantage you can. I don't care what it is. If somebody hands you an advantage, you take it. And to Nadim's point about Gallagher, I think Gallagher's in the stage where they're loaning him out because they can see the talent, but right at that stage of his career, he wasn't quite ready to step in the Chelsea first team. And so they've put him to Palace to get better so that they get the benefit.
Well, isn't this how you get better? By going up against better opposition?
No. Not if it's your own team. If it's any other team, 100%.
You know what, Ian? We've got zero heart.
Not at all. It's about winning.
We know that, Kay. We know that. He's a heartless git.
Unlucky. Unlucky Connor. I'll get you a ticket.
Oh, go on, Craig.
I'll get him a ticket for the game, though.
I agree on both points. They're both different, but I do agree. I think the rule for me, if you loan somebody out, they're playing no matter who the opposition is. So if you loan a player out, he's playing against you. If his club feel he'll perform against his parent club, then he's playing. But that's not the rules. And I do agree with Stevie that, you know, clubs are going to do their utmost to try and weaken the opposition. It's unfortunate because, as we know, FA Cup semi-finals in particular are huge. They're great events. And for any young player, for any experienced player, they're great events. But for a young player getting that experience, so he's not going to get that. But let's not forget, you know, Chelsea are cutthroat. You know, this is a team that are under sanctions. This is a team that, you know, asked Middlesbrough to play behind closed doors because Chelsea couldn't have their own fans there. They've tried everything this year to try and gain an advantage. So they're going to take this opportunity to make sure Palace's best young player, certainly this year, is not going to play. It's an unfortunate scenario of the rules in England. I don't agree with them, but that's what they are, and Chelsea are quite within the right to make sure he's not playing.
Well, you can find out how Crystal Palace fare without him against Chelsea and how Man City and Liverpool turns out with both of these games available on ESPN Plus with full previews as well. Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern for coverage on the first and Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern for Chelsea against Crystal Palace.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thursday's kicker headline after Bayern's quarter-final exit in the Champions League to Villarreal. The plan after the shock out of the Champions League, squad, coach and bosses now being questioned. Archie Rintutt, our roving reporter, and he definitely has been roving this week, let me tell you. Let's start then, will we, with Bayern and what the fallout has been, what the reaction has been to coming out of the Champions League to Villarreal.
Yeah, a very somber one. Hey, that was not planned for what happened on Tuesday night. And for Bayern now, they face another year or so until they get to try and make up for what happened on Tuesday night. That's how Julian Nagelsmann was putting it. And that's almost the position that you're in with Bayern, such as the way that they've been dominating the Bundesliga as well. And when it's talking there about the plan after the shock, it's about who might come in the summer. You saw there, for example, Nico Schlotterbeck of Freiburg pictured as a potential centre-back solution. But there's been a lot of talk before that game about that Bayern team lacking leaders. And I think you saw it on Tuesday night as well. Julian Nagelsmann has spoken about that himself without actually naming it in that way. So it's that. Plus also looking at that team there, you've got Robert Lewandowski contract up next year, Thomas Müller contract up next year, Serge Gnabry, who was on the bench, contract up next year, and Manuel Neuer, the captain, contract up next year. Those are big problems for Bayern, particularly when they are talking about how they don't have the same money as before, which I think is a little bit of a negotiation tactic as well. So Bayern right now are standing in front of quite a lot of uncertainty. And that game as well didn't do Julian Nagelsmann any good in terms of giving him credit in the bank, whether he was seen to be overcomplicating the tactics. I've heard that as a theory. And yeah, lots of problems for Bayern right now, even if they are going to win the Bundesliga again this season.
Are there more problems than if you scratch the surface behind the scene, Archie? Because we've seen some up and down form from them. Oh, granted, they're on top in the Bundesliga, but we have seen a few surprises in league play this season. In cup competition as well has been that Pokal loss. Now this unexpected exit in the Champions League. What is going on?
Well, that's the question, to be honest. What kind of problems are you alluding to exactly? Do you mean in terms of the hierarchy or...?
Yeah, is it the hierarchy? Because even today, Julian Nagelsmann's been having to answer questions about Lewandowski's future and whether he's moving on. We've seen that Niklas Süle is going to Borussia Dortmund. It's usually the players going the other way. What's happening behind the scenes that it seems that there is this unrest?
I think that the difficulty with Bayern is this is historic to a certain extent. There's always been this kind of drama around the club, and the fact that you don't have the same consistency as there's been in the past with the two figureheads, the people who have really led the club in the past, in Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß, being replaced by Hasan Salihamidžić and Oliver Kahn, and they're trying to find their feet. You've got a lot of people at Bayern who are trying to make their way right now and establish themselves, whilst also trying to keep up this image of we are who we are, Mia San Mia, and this whole idea of having, your club run by people who shaped it before, it puts you under a certain pressure. And equally, to hold on to these players and these top stars when there are more appealing projects around Europe right now than playing for Bayern. Bayern's dominance has made actually coming to Bayern a little bit of a less sexy prospect. So, look, I think that there have certainly been murmurs of unrest after how that's been building with what's been happening in the last few weeks, because that performance against Villarreal, that's been coming, Kay. If you've been watching Bayern since February at least, like with what happened against Bochum, disappointing draws in between as well, against Leverkusen and Hoffenheim, let alone that freak result against Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Cup earlier this season. I think what we've seen is, as you say, scratch the surface, and you do find issues, and you do hear that from Julian Nagelsmann as well. And he's even spoken about Serge Gnabry, for example, how his contract situation has been affecting him recently. So lots of moving parts right now, and particularly with the topsy-turvy form of so many key players at the moment, you wonder what state are Bayern going to be in come the start of next season.
And what state are they going to be in against Arminia Bielefeld this weekend? What can we expect?
There's such a quality gap between what those two sides have. The fact that Arminia Bielefeld are looking like they have a chance of surviving is credit to them, because their budget is so inferior to some of the sides that they've been battling against. Even Wolfsburg, who thrashed them last weekend 4-0, Wolfsburg should be nowhere near Arminia Bielefeld. And so there's been talk among the few Bielefeld fans that I know about whether it's time to let go of Frank Kramer and whether he's lost the players. They've had to deal with some terrible head injuries in the past few weeks. Firstly, to Fabian Klose, who is a club legend and is going to be leaving at the end of the season. And that's going to be very emotional. And then to Cedric Brunner last week as well. So I think that's affected them as well, to see what's happening there to their teammates. This Bayern team, I'd expect them to respond. It helps, I think, a bit of motivation for them that they could clinch the title if results go their way next week against Borussia Dortmund.
And then Borussia Dortmund this weekend taking on Wolfsburg. For Erling Haaland, it's 5 games without a goal for him. Not that it's affected his side too much, but it is his longest goal-scoring drought in the Bundesliga. Has much been made of this?
It's been more made about what Marco Rosa has said in the press conference before this game about how they've been looking after Erling Haaland's injury, or trying to, and how seemingly Erling Haaland has refused an MRI scan on his ankle injury. And yet Marco Rosa is also saying that he's been very professional in the way he's gone about it. And I don't see how those two sentences can really add up. The fact is, he's saying that Erling Haaland is having to play through the pain right now. And for a player that you're selling in the summer, I'm not sure how wise that is. Albeit Dortmund, as it's well known, Dortmund have it's a fixed transfer fee. If anyone is able, I think people are able to break that clause. Even the fourth for Erling Haaland, that will happen. But yeah, look, the bigger thing I think for this game is I think the Dortmund fans are so fed up of the Erling Haaland transfer saga. What's interesting is how the fans will respond to the team after what happened against RB Leipzig, how they were whistled in part, how you had fans calling for Marco Rosa to go, and that atmosphere, and whether there are going to be considerations if Marco Rosa is the right man to lead Borussia Dortmund forward. So against Wolfsburg, sure, with the right results, they can secure Champions League football, which is always the number one goal of the CEO, Hans-Joachim Watzke. But it's going to be intriguing to see how they play and how they're received by the fans, because that is very important to Dortmund going forward. And with the success of a team like Eintracht Frankfurt, again, with far less resources than Borussia Dortmund, this week, reaching another European semi-final, even if it's in the Europa League. Remember, Dortmund were knocked out by Rangers. And I know quite a few fans there who are thinking, that should have been us having these sorts of European nights. And okay, Dortmund have achieved greater things in terms of reaching a Champions League final just 9 years ago, as it was. But Dortmund have not improved enough in the last few years. In fact, they've gone downhill. And this game is going to be, I think, a marker in terms of what direction they're going.
Talking about directions, you obviously found your way home. You were in Barcelona when we saw you yesterday, telling us that the Frankfurt fans were celebrating in their numbers, all 30,000 of them in the city. Did you go and join them?
I did. I'll be honest, I was out till three. I went and joined a few of them who I'm quite friendly with, and had a lovely time. And there were still thousands on the streets and partying very peacefully, I have to say. The first few hours after it were a bit weird because everyone was still shocked. No one could quite believe what they'd just seen. And Frankfurt fans aren't used to winning these kind of occasions, really. They've had some great moments in the past few years. But I think this topped all of them. You don't win away at Barcelona if you're Eintracht Frankfurt. Not for a very long time anyway have they been on that kind of stage there. So yeah, it was a great night, and the bags under my eyes might say that I'm feeling it a touch.
Well, we're glad to hear it. We're going to be hearing from you a little later on as well, because you did make it back to get to some championship action too. So we'll have more on that and more from Archie a little later. But this is the upcoming Bundesliga schedule, and those two games we were just talking about, you will be able to see on ESPN+. It is Dortmund taking on Wolfsburg and Bielefeld against Bayern Munich. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. With Erik ten Hag expected to be announced as United's next manager, there have been reports that Cristiano Ronaldo is not in his plans. After 33 games this season, he scored 18 goals, top scorer at the club, 3 assists in that time too, but perhaps not good enough for what ten Hag has planned for United and what's ahead. Craig, what are your thoughts on Cristiano Ronaldo not being in the potential new manager's new plans?
I don't think it's a big story, to be honest. He's not the future. He's been an absolutely terrific player. Stats will back it up, and again, he's got goals this season. But this club is so far off the pace. There is so much dead wood there in general, not suggesting him, but So a new manager is going to have to come in and almost start afresh. And look, it's Mother Nature. He's not the future, and they need to build for the future and fast. So I wouldn't be surprised, because if he's not potentially in the long-term plans and you start having to leave him out, the reaction's not going to be great, and that causes can cause an even bigger problem for you as a manager and within the dressing room to have such a big star unhappy. So yeah, there's going to have to be a compromise reached, but this news does not surprise me. I think a new manager coming in there really has to get a hell of a big brush and sweep that place clean.
So if you do lose Ronaldo's goals, Nadim, and players like Pogba reported to be on their way out as well, who's coming in to make up for that?
I think it's a great question. I think when we think about Ten Hag and the situation that he's coming into at Manchester United, as Craig's alluding to there, this brush, you know, it needs to be sweeping. It might be sweeping for a very long time, because the fact is, it feels like Manchester United right now are more of a project as opposed to something that's even close to a finished article. I think at the start of this season, after they finished second last year, you're thinking with the additions of Sancho, Varane, Ronaldo, this is it. This was going to be the year where United were back. Everything was going to be great. It was going to be rosy. I think they were in the Champions League. Everything was going to be fantastic. But then they saw even more problems. And this year revealed exactly the situation that they're actually in. So for Ronaldo to essentially not be part of a long-term plan for United, I think that's fair. There's no one saying he's not a good player or not one of the greatest players of all time. But the fact is, he probably didn't sign up to a long-term project anyway, as was the case with, say, potentially one of the other two, because they thought this was going to be the year. So for me, you know, he'll probably end up leaving with a big reputation in hand and go somewhere which needs somebody like him for that particular moment, and he'll be incredibly successful because that's exactly what he does. And as for the goals going missing, I think we've seen this year that for United, scoring goals isn't essentially the only thing that's going to solve all their problems, because by all accounts, he's done his job, but they're still sixth or seventh in the league. So let's be clear, there is more to it than just the goals themselves. And I think for United, it's going to be a case of addressing some of those other problems first. And then with those goals, maybe they can find someone that will fill that. But hopefully that will be the final piece, because we've seen so far now that, you know, it's not even touching sides when we think about that as a concept.
And those problems have been, as Nadim's mentioning, really well documented. But if you are having a clear out, why are you clearing out your top scorer?
Yeah, but if you're bringing in a new manager who's going to try and build something, for sure, they have to build a way of playing.
And from day one?
Well, if you're going to have a way of playing, then you have to start on day one to build that and implement it and tell everybody how it's going to happen. And if that includes having a guy who stands in the penalty box and puts a ball in the net, then you include Ronaldo. But that's not how Ten Hag plays. It's about movement. It's about everybody getting involved. And instead of looking at it in a negative light of, well, you're taking away your top scorer, how about the way you play and the way you build this team? You've got players like Sancho. Can you get Rashford back in line? You've got Bruno Fernandes. You've got young Alanga. So you've got a future to look forward to that doesn't include Ronaldo. And that's the bottom line. And the sooner you move Ronaldo, then the sooner you're going to reach your goals. Because if Ronaldo doesn't go and Ronaldo doesn't play, that's going to affect the rest of the club big time.
So, Craig, was it a bad move to bring Ronaldo?
Well, I think it was desperate in a sense. But this is a club that has just done things off the cuff. It was a club who said, or who intimated, that they were going to be buying young and they weren't going to be going down a short-term route. And then they went out and brought Cavani in. Then they went out and brought Ronaldo in. These are all short-term signings. You mentioned about how you replace goals. You spend money, but you recruit well, which they haven't. They have the money. And it was interesting. Our colleague Mark Ogden, three months ago, was on the show talking about he had been talking to Ed Woodward along with some other journalists, and Ed Woodward, when it was put to him that the recruitment and the spending had been poor, did not accept it and thought the recruitment had been pretty good. I mean, that's what you're dealing with. So the new manager has to come in. They have to recruit better. I mean, you've got to look at that back four to start with. Never mind Ronaldo. The goalkeeper has resurrected his career. He's been brilliant. But almost all of the back four, you'd be looking at getting rid of. I mean, OK, Rafael Varane, We know he's a quality player. We just haven't seen it this year. Maybe that's the people around him. And then you go forward. You know, Matic is done. McTominay's a worker. Pogba, I wouldn't have him near the place because I just think for the money, you just don't get enough. Sancho looks as if the pressure is too much for him so far. Rashford's lost form. And Ronaldo, he's nearer to 40 than he is to 30. I mean, am I painting a picture here how big a job this is? But this is Man United's problem. They've sort of just had a carte blanche approach to buying players. And it hasn't worked for them. And this is going to be a big problem for the new manager. But the only surprise I have, Kay, is that people are surprised that Ronaldo might not be on the list for any new manager.
Well, we will have more Manchester United talk with the gang. More
what
pictures like this of Dan Thomas. Oh, yes, Craig. We will let you know more on the latest edition of Extra Time. And if you'd like to know more, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube page.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
MLS action coming up this weekend. All matches available on ESPN Plus. This one, LAFC against Sporting Kansas City, also on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. In the Serie A, some title implications today. Spezia taking on Inter. They were beaten by them. Milan scraping past Genoa with a 2-0 win. They played after Inter. They went back on top of the table, but they have played one more game than Inter. So things are tight in the Serie A race, both winning at the top of the table. As for La Liga, well, there was a game there today on Friday. Real Sociedad taking on Real Betis. That finished 0-0, and they continue to be right next to one another in the table, with Betis 2 points above Real Sociedad. Big games coming up this weekend. Sevilla taking on Real Madrid. Big top of the table clash there. And we'll see how Barcelona respond to what happened against Eintracht Frankfurt on Monday when they take on Cardiff. Let's get some Sky Bet action then, and some big, big games, because things are getting very interesting. Derby do not allow Fulham to clinch promotion. As for Derby, it's a very slight hope for Wayne Rooney's when to stay up. But as you can see, Fulham, it's just a matter of time. And it's just a matter of time again to hear from Archie Rintoul, because it feels like he is everywhere. Archie was at this game. What happened? How come they couldn't get it done, Archie? It was all there for them.
Look, there's some things that come with following this football club, and this is just one of them. Of course, you go 1-0 up and look in no danger whatsoever of conceding in the first half, and then Derby have two chances, two goals in the second half. And that was it, really. I mean, okay, there was a third at 2-1, but we'll forget about that. Look, the point is, yeah, as you say, it is a matter of time. And fair play to Derby for the atmosphere that they cook up, given that they are very close to being relegated as well. They've really had to suffer a lot. I mean, to the point that they've not been sure whether they're going to have a club in the near future. And this is one of the most historic, traditional clubs in English football. And that's a very frightening prospect. So, chapeau to them. And yeah, this one puts a few question marks over which members of the Fulham squad will be there next season and how much upheaval there will be in the summer. I think there needs to be a lot. And it's a little bit telling that the most influential player for Fulham tonight, Fabio Carvalho, is on his way to Liverpool in the summer. So that's going to be a very keenly felt loss because, yeah, he's the best young player I've ever seen at Fulham. He is outstanding, and I think he will enrich that Liverpool side and that Liverpool squad. I think he's got a little bit of ways to go, but the talent and the way that that guy moves his hips, the way that he's able to weave past players, what a player to watch.
So what we've established, in case you didn't know, is that Archie is a Fulham fan and he's also a jinx. The fact that he was there at this game and they didn't manage to get the win and promotion says a lot. They're going up, Archie, but can they stay up this time?
I want to believe, Kay, but the problem is the way that the club's been run in the past and that they've not learned enough from their mistakes. They were closer to holding on last time, but still, were they close enough? I'm not sure. I think that Marco Silva is a better coach than Scott Parker, and that will help this time around. But this squad, there are a lot of key signings that need to be made in a lot of positions. That's a lot of work. And you see how a club, which is as well run as, I'm going to grit my teeth here, Brentford, one of Fulham's arch rivals. You see how even they how they've had to deal with tough times, and you know they've got a better structure in place. And there are just so many teams in the Premier League with unbelievable quality in their squad, and it takes such an effort to win games. And when a club like Burnley as well is sacking Sean Dyche. And, you know, until this point, I'd say Burnley are exactly something that Fulham should be aiming to become. Yeah, I think it's going to be a very difficult season for Fulham next time. Of course, there is a little bit of optimism which fires within me because that's why we're all football fans. if you don't believe,
optimism from you.
Listen. This is a man who was up till 3 a.m. last night, and he stayed awake a little bit longer to be with us. So, Archie, we're going to finally let
that's
you get
an early
some
night.
Rest.
3 a.m. <It's all laughs>
right, eh? Thanks for being with us, Archie.
I'm always optimistic for some reason. But yeah, cheers.
So we're talking about the playoff spots and everything there, but a look at the bottom end of the table, much less favourable for the likes of Derby County, who did get this win here. Yes, it would be a stretch, but there is still a possibility for them. Peterborough and Barnsley, also these sides, as it looks right now, will be heading down to League One.
Stadium that has seen so much football history written. There's plenty more to come.
History made by Manchester City. He's back at Liverpool hands. Mo Salah, too good.
It's Diogo Jota once again. Grealish beautifully taken down.
Foden!
A showdown of potentially epic proportions.
What a weekend it is. FA Cup semi-finals coming up on ESPN Plus. Man City taking on Liverpool again. But this time there has to be a winner. One of these teams will make it to the final this season. That's Saturday's game. Stevie and Craig will be with myself to bring you all the build-up at 10 a.m. Eastern. Kickoff is at 10:30. And then that will be followed on Sunday by also the game between Chelsea and Crystal Palace. But that is all we do have time for on the latest edition of the show. Thank you so much for being with us. Make sure you stick around. These guys will be answering your questions on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Nader Manua, Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here with you. Stevie actually featured heavily on yesterday's show. Well, he hairlined it.
Very flattering, wasn't it?
Well, one of the questions was which was worse, Dan's glasses or Stevie's famous hairstyle?
For a start, I look as though my head's been dipped in a bucket of boiling water. And then look at the state of the haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, Dan looks like Clark Kent compared to me.
Anyway, more on Dan later. Let's get to some of the questions, shall we?
No, listen, that hair. I used to have a number, now and again, years ago, I used to have a number two, which is not, I couldn't go to a number one, right? Every now and again, I'd have a number two, just for laziness. Back then, I could get away with it, but having seen that photo at the time, it's a grave worry to me that that's how my, the top of my head would look now if I had a number two. I've got a guy, there's a guy in Nottingham where I used to live, and my mates were telling me he once shaved his head pretty similar and it never ever grew back. So Steve, is lucky.
I'm lucky. You're no kidding.
Just quickly, can you just remind us how that happened?
I asked the guy for a, I thought I was being clever, and asked the guy for a 3 and a 5. And the guy said, the guy turned around to me and said, "Oh, you're going for the summer cut?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm going for the summer cut." But then unfortunately, by the time, and I had to take my glasses off while he was cutting my hair, so I couldn't actually see what he was doing to begin with. But then even through my goggle eyes with any glasses on, I'm thinking, wow, that looks a bit tight. And then I put my glasses on and the guy went, "Everything okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's fine, huh?" So just too late.
How much does it cost to get your head cut like a tomato? Hey, by the way.
It looks like a skinned tomato.
Do you know how Dan looks there in that still? We've got a saying in Scotland for a look like that. It's called glake it.
Glake it.
What's the look?
Not great. It's not a good thing.
A glake it look means as if it looks as if there's absolutely nothing inside that head of his. It's empty.
Yeah, it's not a good thing to be called.
Listen, Dan got roasted yesterday. I think we should leave him alone tonight, at least for now anyway. All right, let's start with your questions. Craig, I'm going to come to you first. Liverpool fan here, but my question is about Burnley. We shouldn't always talk about the top half. Were they right to sack Sean Dyche? Who would they appoint if it was up to them? Is Big Sam the default?
Do you know what? The answer is I don't think they were right to sack Sean Dyche, but there's new ownership there. And unfortunately, that comes with a little bit more of the unknown. Don't forget, Dyche has been relegated before with Burnley and actually came back stronger and were in the Europa League. So I think it's an unfortunate scenario of A, new ownership, and B, the money in the Premier League. But yeah, and maybe for Sean Dyche and Ian Wone and Tony Loughlin, the coaches there, been there a long time, maybe they need a fresh change as well, because let's not forget the job he's done there over the years. Okay, people might not agree or like the football, but the job that Dyche has done at Burnley has been very, very good. But new ownership, new ideas.
Nadim, next one for you. Is this the best City defence of the Guardiola era? The back four is arguably better than Liverpool's.
Do you know what? I'm seeing the pros and cons of both. I really am, but I think this City back four is pretty, like, I love it. When they're at their best, they are very, very special. I think, you know, the balance of, say, Kyle Walker defensively on that side, the flair of Cancelo on the other side, and then the two centre-backs, whoever they may be, how solid they can be and stuff like that. I think it is great, but then, you know, with Liverpool, like, they have Virgil van Dijk, as well as, you know, Andy Robertson, who's obviously very good, Trent, who's good, Matip, who does his part, but they have Virgil van Dijk, who, for me, might be the best defender in the world right now, so... Yeah, I think it's probably City's best defence for a very long time, maybe ever in total. But the fact is, Liverpool's isn't too bad either, to be honest with you.
Next one. We criticise United, Stevie, for not having a good coach for years now and for lacking identity. For all the criticism Atleti get, wouldn't a club like United love to have an identity and a coach that fits like Atleti's does?
Oof. Oof.
Well, it's one thing to have an identity, but you want your team to have an identity that the rest of the world can't stand. Is that what you want?
Maybe.
And you can't have that if you're Manchester United.
Maybe.
If you're Burnley, you can have that. Or any of those teams. But if you're Manchester United and you're brought up on incredible players, incredible attacking players, Winning trophies. Well, that says more about La Liga, does it not? That a team like that wins it. That's not good. Do you think that's good for La Liga? A team of vagabonds and rogues and defend at all costs.
Vagabonds and rogues.
Yeah, it wins La Liga. That's good for
João
La Liga.
Felix.
Is that good for La Liga?
Antoine Griezmann.
Well, João Felix, by the way, hasn't been playing up until about 3 or 4 months ago. So the guy's never got a game regularly since he got there. Is that and they won La Liga. Is that good for La Liga? So, now, if you want an identity, at least make it a good one.
Craig. I wouldn't have him anywhere near the place, whatever it was. If it was Liverpool, City, United, Chelsea, any of those top teams, if he was coming to my club, if I was a fan, I'd be running for the hills. Because, yeah, there is a semblance of success that they have along the way. But most of the time, you can't have success. You don't win every season. And when you're not winning, it's not fun. And when you're not winning and you're not having that fun, you get your fun through the football. And okay, you might be disappointed at the end if somebody pips you, but you've enjoyed going to the games. What do they enjoy when they're having an unsuccessful season like this one, for example, where they've struggled to get into the top four until the last few weeks? Is that real fun for Atleti fans? Do they really like that when they were singing and chanting at the end of that game because Simeone was applauding? When they turned up for 25% of the tie at most, the last sort of half an hour of 180 minutes? Come on. I mean, people talk about what Man United need and what one or two other clubs need. The punters would be running for the hills if somebody like him was in charge. Watching that dross.
Real Madrid were talking about sacking Ancelotti because they played in one game in the Champions League against PSG.
But you're a
Real Madrid fan, right? Did you enjoy watching that game?
And I enjoy any team that I favour.
Did you enjoy
Which game are you talking about?
Which game? PSG. When Ancelotti...
If you do that again,
you're at the door.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Did you enjoy that?
Are going to be those games. If you come through it with a win, though, that's what matters, isn't it?
Did you enjoy the game?
Doesn't matter if you enjoy it, if you win.
It doesn't matter if you enjoy it.
What do you want? Do you want a joint free-flowing football and then to lose 7-6?
Yeah. You know when you go to the movies, you pick the...
Stevie,
you try and find a film with garbage.
Shad Neil Warnock as manager.
there you go. Say no more.
Listen, beggars can't be choosers, and I'm saying that about myself. Nadim, the Atleti fans showed the other night how much they love their coach, though. What about the United fans? Couldn't they get behind a coach like Diego Simeone?
I wouldn't necessarily say coach like Diego Simeone, but somebody who they feel sort of embodies what the football club is. I think that's what we're kind of missing about this. Like, basically, we're saying United want to have Fergie back when they had an identity and they could get right behind him because this is Fergie's Man United team. But I'll be honest with you, like, Ten Hag might end up being that guy, but at this moment in time, I can't even picture who that would be, what their style of play would be like, or what they'd be like as a football club. Because to me, it just seems like from when Fergie left, they're just floating around, like, they come close to winning something every so often and they perform well for short periods. And they could beat anybody in a particular game. But, like, what are Manchester United right now? Well, they're a club that will once very successful. So if they can find a manager that can create something new, then great. But I think one of the issues is that for lots of those people who support the team, I don't think they really want something new. I think they just want the old days back.
Nadim, I'm going to stick with you for the next one. Do you think City should buy Christopher Nkunku over Erling Haaland? He's much cheaper and has no fitness issues.
No fitness issues. That's a bit harsh to say Haaland's just going to have tons of fitness issues. I think for City, is if they are to bring someone in new, I think it would have to be something which they don't already have. And that essentially is like a 6'4" Norwegian striker who's scored as many goals as he's played in games in the Bundesliga.
Very specific.
He's very good, but I believe there are similar players to him within that City lineup now. So you could sort of continue what they do have, but to have something different like that, I think it takes them potentially to another level, and if not another level, just a whole different sort of challenge for the opposition to play up against, because somebody like that, you know, he's not scoring goals by accident. So I don't think the two are essentially comparable for City's needs right now.
Okay, Craig, start, drop and bench these in their prime. Xavi, Iniesta and Modric.
Xavi. Oh my God.
Who was better, Xavi or Iniesta? Both. Stevie, help me out here. Who are you having, Xavi or Iniesta?
Okay.
I actually couldn't tell you who was better.
So what does that change in your answer on who's better? Where does Modric come, depending on who's better there?
I'm putting Modric, I might be wrong, I'm putting him just slightly behind those two.
Yeah, I'm with
just terrific player.
Yeah.
Just behind. So Modric has to get dropped. I'm going to say Xavi gets benched and a start in Iniesta. That's what I'm saying.
Stevie?
Done.
The only answer, I'll agree with Craig. I think unfortunately, as good as Modric is, he's behind the other two. But I've no idea which one is better. No idea.
You just close your eyes and go, yeah.
Honestly, yeah. Hold on. Yeah.
Just think of the careers they could have had under Diego Simeone. All that defending.
Yeah.
That.
Don't turn this on me. Shoot the messenger. I'm just putting the questions to you
silky
guys.
Silky passing, nutmegs, all those things. Who wants that?
They do.
Blood and guts and bruises on your legs and spitting at people and elbowing people. That's more fun.
They do. Have you got an opinion on this one?
No, I kind of agree with the guys, to be honest. Unfortunately, it feels like you have to drop Modric, which feels exceptionally harsh. But then for the other two, it's just a toss-up in terms of what type of football you like. And if you love somebody who's just going to dribble past you with about five outside of the foot turns, you got to go for Iniesta or whatever. But if you want like some of the best passing you've ever seen, then it's Xavi. So for me, I guess I'll say Iniesta, Xavi, and then Modric being dropped.
All right. Okay, last question. No, sorry. Penultimate question, and I'm very interested in this one because I wondered when I saw it the other day.
No, it's not. It's the second last question.
Don't start doing that to me. I'm not going to fall for it today. I'm not falling for it today.
It's not just you that sees the questions in advance. The amount of prep it goes in for this show, we know what's coming. Not.
All right.
Not.
I only get them here just before on the desk.
Oh, we never know.
Time. All right, no, they never know. That's the truth. They don't know until they get asked them on the night. No. Stevie, your thoughts on Jamie Carragher naming you as the left-back in his all-time Liverpool's best 11. Who was your favourite left-back that played for Liverpool, though?
Cool.
So, first of all, did you see his 11?
First of all, I've always said Carragher knows what he's talking about. I've always said that, regardless.
Favourite left-back... Wow. I'm just surprised Carragher's seen him play.
Carragher was actually a kid that used to come now and again when I was still there. He actually turned up in an Everton strip one night when they grabbed it off him and said, right, don't ever come back with that on your back again. Either Alan Kennedy or Alec Lindsay. Alec Lindsay had a lovely left peg, and Barney was just not right in the head and scored goals, and he could ping a ball 40 yards in behind to somebody's feet. So either Alan Kennedy or Alec Lindsay I'll go with.
All right, last question now. Who can do the best Dan Thomas social media star / model imitation out of the three of you? I don't know if you saw yesterday's Extra Time or you've been perusing Instagram and seen that Dan Thomas has suddenly become a social media influencer and posted this picture and saying thank you for the shirt that he'd been sent probably for free.
Considering what you showed earlier, I guess I'm out the running for this, right?
Because yesterday I asked which is worse, this picture or your hairstyle.
I'd rather look like that any time than that hairstyle.
Can you do the pose?
The pose?
The pose that Dan's doing.
Is it?
What's happened to that man? Hey, what's happened to that man?
I think he's in on the catwalks.
I need to undo my tie and everything.
Has he had a vanity transplant or something? What the hell's going on? I mean, he's stuck at that.
On Sunday?
Is he in on Sunday? I'm not working with him if he's wearing those glasses. Tell you that now. What's that all about? And by the way, he can't dress either, so somebody's obviously given him that. He can't dress.
No, somebody did give him it. That's why he put the poster.
Tell to hear it.
I'm not on Instagram. It's reasons like that I'm glad I'm not on Instagram. To see absolute guff like that.
When did he do that?
Oh, just this week, yesterday.
Right, so why?
Because now he's an influencer.
What's that mean?
Gosh.
I'll tell you what he is.
No.
I can't see it.
All right, Nadim, would you care to attempt Dan's pose, please?
to be honest, I've not got the same sort of lighting. As you can see, he's made sure the sun's coming down on his face. I wonder how many times he's taken the shot. You know what I mean? It's like just...
I wonder what filter it is.
Yeah, so just stare into the camera, Dan, yeah.
So do you think he thought we wouldn't get a hold of that?
But you obviously isn't bothered, it's still there. If Craig's given up on us.
Sad to see.
Craig, was that your impression of Dan?
No, I was leaning down to get some. I tell you what, if that's not signs of a midlife crisis, I'm not quite sure what is. There's definitely I'm in my 40s now, I need to try and make myself feel a bit younger. Hang out with the groovy gang, sort of, still in my 20s mentality.
He'll be back on Sunday. Guaranteed
soon he'll be driving about the Connecticut area in a two-seater convertible car with a roof down in winter. Guaranteed.
Well, he has to be able to defend himself, and we're giving him that chance on Sunday when he is back. And I'm sure he'll be delighted and ready for all of you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for your questions on the latest edition of Extra Time. Thanks to Nadim, Craig and Stevie. Be sure to always join us every single day on ESPN FC.